On the New South Wales mid-north coast, residents are battling to stop their homes from falling into the sea. This week, they'll be getting a better idea of how the Great Otari City Council plans to help save about 20 homes at a place called Old Bar. These are homes that are under threat from serious coastal erosion. Neil Brown owns one of the homes at risk. Hi, Neil.
How are you, Cameron?
Good. What's happening to your unit at the moment?
We have been working closely in with council up there for coming up to 7 years, and just been trying to get something done to help protect the properties along a fairly long strip of coastline up there.
So you've got a unit at the Meridian Resort, is it?
That's right, yeah.
So how much of the garden, the back garden there, have you seen fall away in recent years?
We've probably lost about a third of it.
Okay. So every time you see a weather forecast of big waves or a decent storm, how do you feel?
We certainly cringe, Cameron.
I bet.
I've never watched weather patterns so closely in my life.
Is it stressful?
Extremely so, Cameron. People lose sight of the human cost, the way that affects people's lives on a day-to-day basis. Some people look at the big picture and say, oh yeah, well it's just people trying to protect an asset. It must be all those wealthy people from Sydney on their holiday houses, when it couldn't be any further from the truth. It's mum and dads that have bought an asset to try and help improve their position or maybe retire at. And it's just the long-term not knowing of what's going on and what we're going to be able to do.
What attracted you to Old Bar? What was the appeal?
I actually went up there to a place a little bit further out called Manning Point, and I saw an advertisement for a place being advertised on the beach, and I thought, geez, that'd be a nice place to have a holiday place or be able to retire, and it just went from there.
You saw it, you liked it, and you bought
it. Yeah. Close to 2 hours from Newcastle, which I thought was a fairly reasonable time frame to have a holiday place.
Mm, okay, and what, the plan one day to maybe retire there?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So this was about a decade ago.
That's right, yeah. The resort at the Meridian was built about 11 years ago.
Mm. What signs of erosion were there then?
Really none that anybody could speak of. To put it in perspective, you'd probably look at that time, a scarp of maybe 2 metres, which is now increased to a scarp of probably 6 to 7 metres in height,
mm-hmm.
which now at 2 metres you would think is manageable, fairly easy to protect if anything happened, but at 6 metres it obviously takes a lot more to try and plan to protect the properties behind it.
Yeah, but when you made the purchase,
yes,
a decade back,
yep,
did it come into your thinking at all that erosion might be a problem?
And not at all.
Sea level rises could be a problem, any of that?
No. Well and truly before global warming.
Would you have made a different decision if you... Well, I guess you would if you knew then what you know now.
Oh, hindsight's the one with the most perfect vision, Cameron, and we can only make decisions to move forward, not backwards.
Yeah, oh, I guess so. Yeah, now you deal with it. Stay with us, Neil. Neil Brown is president of the Meridian Resort Board. Laura Black is also with me. Laura's corporate support leader at the Great Otari City Council. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Cameron. How are you going?
Good. How serious is the threat around Old Bar to homes?
Yeah, it's incredibly serious. You mentioned before 20 homes. It's actually, the Meridian itself has, I think, 40 units in mm-hmm. it, and there are 20 properties. The Meridian is just one of those 20 properties along that stretch. So the Meridian itself has people who own there, as Neil has described, but the houses around it are actually just local local people who live on that stretch in that road.
Who are facing the prospect of their house falling into the sea.
Of losing their only place of residence. Mm. And we have another street which leads to Lewis Street, Pacific Parade, and it's under threat as well. It's the next street, and it's just, you know, the street just slightly north of Lewis Street.
So, Neil, we heard from Neil there. Neil sounds a little worried, but quite philosophical about it as well. What's the level of concern around the community?
This is a really emotive issue in our community. We certainly have property owners who are possibly losing their only home, some who are losing, you know, a second home. We have a lot of the communities, you know, about 3,500 to 4,000 in size, and mm-hmm. we also have a lot of people who enjoy the beach amenity of the community. So there are some really, really opposing views in relation to all of this, and that makes for a very emotive time for all. So on top of, you know, working as a council, working from a professional point of view through the science and putting forward management strategies, we are also dealing with a lot of emotion and a lot of, you know, a lot of raw community expression from the community as well. So it has been a difficult time, and it is hard sometimes to stand back from that and just deal with the things that we need to deal with. But I would agree with something Neil said before about 10 years ago, you know, before global warming. And I guess global warming, climate change, whatever, that's not really the conversation in the community. Certainly the community talks about observing different weather patterns and observing, you know, bigger storm events and greater velocity in the waves and all those things, but they don't talk about climate change.
Okay. That emotion that you describe, I guess you'll see more of that tomorrow night. You're holding community meetings to discuss the what the council can and is doing. What are the options that the council has come up with to try to address this, to try to save some of the homes that are in danger?
Okay, so what we have done is that under New South Wales legislation, we're required, all coastal councils are required to prepare a coastal zone management plan. We have prepared a coastal zone management plan for about 32 kilometres of our coastline. The coastline that we manage is a bit bigger than that, but mm-hmm. this is where settlements are along 32 kilometres of it. And we've also prepared in relation to Old Bar, which is experiencing a significantly greater erosion and recession.
It's the hotspot, really, isn't it?
It is the hotspot, yeah. And it's actually one of 15 hotspots in New South Wales, but even of those 15, it's experiencing a greater rate of recession than all of the others.
So what do you do?
We've prepared an addendum to our coastal zone management plan, and tomorrow we plan to go to the community, and we're hosting two forums in the community, two information forums. And we will be explaining to the community that the council has before it, the elected body has before it, a decision to make in May to make a recommendation to the minister. The options for Old Bar are planned retreat, and that is effectively acknowledging that recession will continue at the current rate and that we will need to put in place some measures to restrict further development for a number of houses in that area.
Okay, so you stop development, you don't necessarily acquire existing homes that you think might be in under threat?
No, we haven't, in our planned retreat option, we haven't included anything about purchasing or, you know, public funds being used to assist, you know, property owners in that area. No, the current strategy doesn't include that. Mm-hmm. So that's one option, but the option that we're actually recommending to the council is to construct a four-stage rock revetment wall. The first stage would be in front of these 20 properties, of which the Meridian is one. That's stage one of the rock revetment wall. Stage two is in front of Pacific Parade, which is the other street I spoke about. Mm-hmm. And stage three, south and north, would be dependent on what happens going forward with continued recession rates. So it's a 25-year plan. It's four stages in this rock revetment wall at a cost of about $52
million. $52 million. How many ratepayers have you got?
yeah, not enough to cover $52 million. But we are actually in conversation with the state government about how that might be funded because, you know, we have a huge amount of infrastructure, a huge backlog, and this council and this community couldn't fund such a structure.
Mm. Neil, what are your thoughts of the revetment wall? Would you like to see it go ahead?
Absolutely. When you say before philosophical, I have a realistic view because I've been dealing with LORA most recently, but the council and state government bodies for quite a long time. And we actually proposed, in consultation with the council, a soft geofabric bag wall, which was what we believed at the time was the right thing, under instructions from geotechnicians and coastal planning specialists. But that was 3 years ago, and the view seems to have changed. What's being proposed now is not only going to help protect private properties, but also public assets, especially if the 25-year plan is implemented to cover schools and the surf club, and will cover significantly more people and properties, but also provide a much, much better asset for the community in the design. There is access for people to be able to use along the wall, where people in a wheelchair or disabled may not be able to access the beach at the moment. With a walking path along what's being proposed, they would be able to access that asset as well.
Okay, so you argue there's community benefits to this.
Laura, oh, definitely.
Laura, what would it do to the beach if you build such a wall?
Oh, look, there's no doubt we acknowledge that the beach at the southern end where this stage one and two of the rock revetment wall go in, there's no doubt that over time we will lose the sand beach in front of the rock revetment wall. We acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. And that, I guess, has been something that the community has had to consider and has been part of the reason for the very different view to Neil's and other property owners and other people in Old Bar, and that is that a sandy beach is Old Bar. It's what it's all about, and we should retain a sandy beach at all costs.
Laura Black is the corporate support leader at the Greater Taree Council. You've also been hearing from Neil Brown, president of the Meridian Residents Board, and we're discussing coastal erosion and how local councils deal with the issue, try to save properties that are under threat as erosion really eats away at the land around some of these homes. Now, Jan McDonald is from the Law Faculty at the University of Tasmania and keeps a close eye on the legal framework around coastal erosion. Hi, Jan.
Hello there, Cameron.
How widespread is the issue we're hearing about here at Old Bar near Taree? Is it something you hear, you see nationally?
Oh, very much so. Wherever you've got a sandy beach across the entire Australian coastline, you've got issues relating to coastal erosion or, in some very rare cases, coastal accretion, as it's referred to, where you've actually got an increasing beach. But with projections of sea level rise as a result of climate change, these issues are likely to increase quite dramatically over the next 20 to 50 years.
Okay, we heard some of those projections just, was it last week, the IPCC report, the up to 100 centimetres in some areas. Can you tell us a little bit about the Bruin rule? What is it?
It's a basic rule of thumb. It's got lots of exceptions to it, but where you have a sandy beach, the basic rule of thumb is that for every metre of sea level rise, you will see 100 metres of inward erosion.
Mm-hmm.
So if the IPCC is saying that by 2100 we're likely to have between 0.8 and 1 metre of sea level rise, what that means is that we will lose horizontally 80 to 100 metres of our coast. And again, there's lots of exceptions to it, so I wouldn't want listeners to start sending in their messages saying, yes, but that doesn't always apply. It doesn't always apply. It's a basic rule of thumb for planners to use.
Okay, but it does highlight the extent of the threat in some areas. The IPCC report last week described Australia's approach to planning for sea level rise as piecemeal. It used that word, piecemeal. Is that a good description?
Yes. The way that regulation for coastal hazards generally has emerged in the last 10 to 15 years in Australia has been to take state planning systems, and state governments under our arrangements are the ones primarily responsible for planning frameworks, but to take those state systems and largely devolve responsibility for coastal hazard management and planning to local governments. And what we've seen is, despite repeated calls for greater national coordination of these issues, there has been quite significant disparity across the states, but also within states there's quite significant differences in the approaches taken by different local government areas, partly dependent upon the demographic and the socioeconomic features of that particular area, but also as a consequence of their different resource base and whether or not they've got the money to do the mapping and the resources to do the subsequent coastal planning.
What are some examples where local councils have effectively planned for coastal erosion?
The effectiveness of planning will, in some respects, not be really seen until we actually have significant sea level rise and further erosion in the future. So at the moment, what we can talk about are instruments that we think are going to meet these criteria of effectiveness and also equity, which is the issue that both Laura and Neil adverted to as well. But you've got a number of places that are introducing staged approval mechanisms or approvals for new development that require a rethink of the development when erosion reaches a certain point, and there might be requirements to actually relocate at that point. And where you have those, what it means is that the development gets done differently in the first place. You're not going to put in multi-million dollar developments where you know that there is a potentially hazardous coastline that may limit the time frame or the lifespan of that development.
But what if there's pressure from developers that want to build on the seafront? Valuable land, quick money to be made.
This achieves those imperatives. By having sunset clauses, if you like, on development, it means that the valuable and highly desirable coastal properties can be used and can be enjoyed and developed while they're still there. But it also means that councils are covering themselves and covering future communities from future liabilities by making sure that if erosion reaches a certain point, the use and enjoyment of those properties and that development can't continue because it poses a threat to public safety or public amenity.
We heard Laura talk about planned retreat as possibly the future around the Great Otari Council in some parts. Are we going to see more and more of that? That councils or states have to put in some kind of framework for planned retreats?
I would certainly like to see state leadership in relation to what circumstances would suggest that planned retreat was a really desirable policy. I don't think that we're going to see planned retreat along the very heavily urbanised parts of the Australian coastline. But there are certainly going to be pockets of areas where planned retreat really is the most sensible, the most efficient solution, even though it imposes a hardship on the individual landowners that are going to be affected. It's simply not going to be possible financially to adequately protect a lot of these properties, even if we put in hard defensive structures like revetments. They too will have a limited lifespan, particularly as sea level rise does play its part further and further into the future.
But is it mainly the financial cost that means planned retreat is preferable in some areas than building seawalls, or are there other costs as well?
Well, there are certainly costs associated with hard defences, and Laura's already mentioned the fact that you lose one of your most valuable assets, which is, of course, the sandy beach, once you start putting in those kinds of seawall protections. But It also has implications for the migration of wetlands. So where you have really valuable coastal habitats, once you have hard defences in place, they really have got nowhere that they can go inland of that that seawall or that protective structure. So there's costs and how the cost should be borne across the community, whether or not the wider public should be expected to cover the costs of protective works that really only protect a small number of properties. And then there are also the social and environmental costs of these hard protective structures. The difficulty that we face is that we're looking at a whole set of different kinds of trade-offs, but they're trade-offs between short-term and long-term. And at the moment, there's very powerful interests related to existing properties, and it's very difficult to then convince people that we need to take a longer-term view and that protecting those may be sensible in the short term, but it's not cost-effective or equitable in the longer term.
Neil, if we come back to you, where we started, do you expect that you'll be in your property, your coastal property, in, say, another 10 years' time?
It's quite interesting listening to Jan's perspective. I've not spoken to her before, but I suppose it makes it difficult for us, as in where it in a block of 41 units, and obviously, like we said before, hindsight is a wonderful thing, but and movable houses or transportable houses is great for planning going forward, but a multi-million dollar structure, it's a little bit harder to move something like that, and she's quite right in that there's different pockets along the coast where protection is the most sensible option and planned retreat is the most cost-effective in other areas. And as long as there's a balance between both of those that's taken as a responsibility of state and possibly federal government, then that's more than what most people would want to ask for.
All the best, Neil. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Neil Brown, President of the Meridian Residents Board. You also heard from President Jan from Professor Jan McDonald from the Law Faculty at the University of Tasmania, and Laura Black, the Corporate Support Leader at the Greater Taree City Council.